Hine, Masharonu Chachaminu Zal Vrachahu, and that which our sages of blessed memory have taught us is Sha'adam lo Nivra, that man was only created Lis Anegal Hashem, to take enjoyment from Hashem, Ulihanos Miziv Shchinaso, and to benefit from Hashem's glory, Shezeu Atanug Amiti, because this is the true enjoyment, Va'idon HaGadol, and the greatest joy, Mikol HaYidunim, from all of the joys, Sheichol Milimotze, that can be experienced. Welcome to the second session of the Mesillas Sharim Shir, Life 101. I'd like to recap the words of the Mesillas Sharim from the first one. As an apology, we're not going to cover much of the text very quickly. As you'll see, there's a tremendous amount from each phrase and each expression. But let's recap the beginning words. Yesod HaChassidus, the source, foundation of proper service to Hashem, V'shorish HaDvod HaTmima, and the root, and the perfect service to Hashem, She'yizborev Yis'amitzetz L'Adam, it should become clear and truthful to a person, Ma Chovoso B'Lomo, what are his obligations in the world? One phrase that changes man's understanding of life. Mesillas Sharim is telling us, the bedrock foundation, the root of service of Hashem, is understanding what my obligations are, why did Hashem create me, what's life about, what does Hashem want from me. But listen to the phrase, the way he says it. She is borer v'yis ametz. It should become clear and truthful to a person what his obligations are. He didn't say that you should learn it, you should know it, you should study it. It should become clear and truthful. Those words, I believe, are very, very significant. And I believe that actually those words define much of what we're going to do in this series, and in fact really define much of learning Mussar. You see, Mesillas Sharim begins before this perek. He has an introduction where he explains that he's not going to say many chidushim. Now my Rebbe Zatzal, Rav Shiva, used to say many times, you see Mesillas Sharim's humility, because the book is filled with chidush after chidush, novel point after novel point. But his introduction, he says, you may not find many chidushim here, but the main goal is that you should read it again and again, and when you read it, it'll begin sinking in. And I believe the key to learning Mussar is understanding that it has to become clear and truthful, exactly what the Mesillas Sharim says. Oftentimes, it's not intellectual understanding, but it's a much deeper understanding, getting it on a deeper level. Now, as a little word of apology over here, I've learned the Mesillas Sharim before. As a matter of fact, I've been learning it, reading it, teaching it, and writing about it for 30 years now. And every time I come back to the first perek, and I've come back many, many a time, after spending untold hours, it's a new understanding, it's a deeper understanding, I get it to a deeper level. And to share with you an interesting aside on that concept, there is one shmuz that I've mentioned that is my probably most favorite understanding life setting, shmuz number 24. The reason why I particularly like it is because I think it defines exactly why we're here, why Hashem gives out different life settings to people. And I've said that shmuz more than once. The first time that I said that really in a public forum was for my son's bar mitzvah, and my son is now about 22. I've said that shmuz at least over the course of 10 years, a few times. To illustrate to you how many is a few, my son, after his bar mitzvah, got to hear me say it again and again and again, to the point that he was lip-syncing the shmuz. I said that in different venues, to frum audiences, to non-frum audiences, to young audiences, to old audiences. I said it again and again. At this point, I estimate that I've said that shmuz at least 250 times. Now, you must assume I get bored. And interestingly enough, not only don't I get bored, many a time I try to find a new audience so I could say an old shmooze again so that I can get back into it. But here's the question. I wrote the shmooze. Obviously I know it because I couldn't have said it if I didn't know it. And I said it more than once. Maybe I said it 10 times. Many shmoozes I've said 20 times. And yet I look for another audience to say it again. Why? Because it's not about intellectually understanding it alone. It's about getting it on a deep, fundamental level, feeling it, experiencing it, and it requires constant repetition. What the Mesillas Yesharim is telling us is she's Baravi's Amet is an avoda. For it to become clear and truthful is not just reading a novel, not just reading a math textbook. You open a science book, you read the facts, you know the knowledge. But this is much deeper. It's much more fundamental. And I'd like to spend a few minutes sharing with you quite how deep it is, quite how significant it is. Let's look at a pasuk in Chumash. Pasuk says, Hashem speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says, Va'era el Avram el Yitzhak el Yaakov, I appeared to Avram, to Yitzhak Yaakov, Bekel Shakai, with the name of Kel Shakai, Shmi Hashem lo nadati lehem. The name Hashem, I didn't teach them, I didn't inform them of. Rashi comments on that, Lo hodati in Ksiv Kan. It doesn't say that Hashem didn't tell them, didn't let them know about that name, Elo nadati. I wasn't recognized to them with that name. I mean, of course they knew the different names of Hashem. And the different names of Hashem signify and on some level represent the different midos, the different ways in which Hashem functions in the world. The Avos knew very well the different names of Hashem and different manifestations of Hashem in the world. But what Hashem is saying to Moshe is that you're going to have an opportunity that the Avos didn't have. You'll get to experience that which they didn't. You see, they experienced Kel Shakai, but they didn't experience Hashem. What does the name Hashem mean? Explains Rashi. The midas amitishali, my true nature, inshallah nikra Hashem, that the word Hashem refers to, neman la'ames devarai, who is truthful and carries out that which he says. You see, the name Hashem refers to the fact that Hashem pays back, that Hashem fulfills that which he says. That name they knew about, but they didn't experience. You, Moshe, are going to get to experience. You see, I promised the Avos that their children I would take out of Mitzrayim. I promised them that their children I would take to Eretz Yisrael. I would give them a land that was wide and vast. But they didn't get to experience it. So they didn't get to experience the name of Hashem. But you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're going to experience it. You're going to see the name Hashem, not just as a knowledge. You're going to feel it. You're going to experience it. Now, here's the question on this Rashi. Did the Avos trust Hashem? Hashem said he's going to take their children out of bondage. Hashem promised the Avos that he's going to bring the Bnei Yisrael to the land of Israel. Do you think Avram questioned Hashem? Do you think maybe he didn't believe Hashem? Hashem, I'm not sure. I'm not sure you're good on your word. Avram Avinu knew with absolute total understanding that Hashem is truthful and Hashem will do that which Hashem said he's going to do. So what does it mean that they didn't know Hashem? They didn't recognize that name of Hashem? And the answer is they knew, but they didn't experience. You see, what Moshe Rabbeinu experienced was seeing Hashem carry out. And you can know something. You can know it as clearly as Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov could know it, but it wasn't 100%. It wasn't with total veracity. It wasn't with total yediyah, without total knowledge. And it's not until you experience it that you really live it, that it's vivid, that it's right there. And what Hashem was saying to Moshe Rabbeinu is, you have an experience, you have an opportunity to experience Hashem in a way that they didn't, because you're going to be able to live through it. And ultimately, that's the point. Knowing things intellectually is a first step. Knowing things in a cognitive sense is the first step of moving forward. But it's feeling it, living it, experiencing it. When we talk about Yiras Shamayim, it's a sensation. If you and I were standing next to the Chofetz Chaim, and we were watching the Chofetz Chaim daven, and we'd see the man tremble, and we'd see the man almost quake in fear, and we'd see the man beg Hashem, well, here's the question. Is Hashem more present in the Chofetz Chaim's Dalet Amos than in mine? Is the Chofetz Chaim saying different words? Same mincha, same siddur, what's the difference? The difference is, to the Chofetz Chaim, Hashem was right there. Not like 13 billion years, light years up in Shemayim, but Hashem was present. But the Chofetz Chaim felt it, was margish it, experienced it. And what we're dealing with here are concepts that require intellectual understanding, require cognition, but much more than that, require feeling and understanding on a deeper level. And I'd like to bring one more example of this. One more example, which is from a different shmooze, and it's very worthwhile to review the shmoozim. The purpose of this class, this shir, this session, is really not to review previous shmoozim. Hopefully you've done that, hopefully you do that. The idea here is to bring these concepts to a greater focus and to work on actually learning Musar and actually applying it. But let's focus on a previous shmooze. The pasuk tells us that Hashem appears to Noach. And Hashem tells Noach, build a teva, because I'm going to destroy the inhabited world. Man has turned wicked, and civilization will come to an end. Noach sets out to do exactly that which he was told to do. He builds this large teva, and he spends years, 120 years, building this teva. And the reason he spent 120 years, Chazal tell us, because Hashem wanted people to see. Hashem wanted to have the generation look at this man building this large boat, and these people were supposed to come over to Noach and say, what are you doing? And Noach was there. And the people came over and they asked, what are you doing? And Noach said, Hashem is going to destroy the world. If you don't do tshuva, if you don't change your ways, Hashem is fed up, chaviyachol, and Hashem is going to destroy the world. And the reason Hashem wanted Noach to do that is because Hashem wanted Noach to teach his generation. And for 120 years, that's what Noach did. And finally, it didn't help. The rain begins falling, and the pasuk is very clear that Noach, his family, his children, went into the teva mipnei mei hamabul because of the waters of the mabul. Because of the waters of the mabul, Noach entered into the teva, and the Medrash tells us that he waited. He waited until the water came up to his thighs. He didn't go in when it first started raining. Even though Hashem said, this is the day, even though Hashem told him a week earlier that in 1 week's time it's going to rain and that's when the mabul is going to start, Noach waited until the water came up to his thighs, until literally he was forced into the teva. Only then did he take his family, did he take his people into the teva. And you may wonder, why did Noach wait? And Rashi explains why. Says Rashi, Af Noach miktane emuna. Even Noach was from the people who are small in Amunah. Mamin ve'eno mamin. He believed and he didn't believe that Hashem was going to bring this mabul. You see, he didn't fully understand. He didn't fully believe it. He didn't fully get it. And it wasn't until he was literally forced by the water, only then did he enter the teva. And that Rashi should be rather perplexing. Hashem himself spoke to Noach. Noach is an ish tzaddik. You can debate whether he lived in the generation of Avram, how he would fare, but he was a tzaddik. He was a tzaddik who got nevuah. He was a tzaddik that Hashem said, you are the man from whom I will rebuild humanity. And for 120 years, he built his teva. 120 years, he spent his time teaching the generation what to do. So what do you mean he didn't believe? How could he not believe? And the answer to this question is that belief is not an on and off switch. Belief is not 100% or zero. There are levels and levels, levels and levels. Believe me, Noach knew that there was going to be a mabul. Noach understood that Hashem was going to bring this flood. But he understood and he didn't. He did and he didn't. It was 80%, 85%, 90%, 92%. But it wasn't crystal clear. It wasn't 100% clear. And if you'd like to understand the focus of learning Musar, besides the ideas, besides the knowledge, it's understanding it on a deeper level, experiencing it, feeling it, being margish it, making it real. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to describe the purpose of learning Musar, b'espailus, learning Musar emotionally, is l'harchiv es hadavar, to make it wider, to take something that's distant, that's far away, and bring it close, to experience it. And that requires work. It requires tremendous focus. Mesillas Yesharim is teaching us, she is baravis amitz. The work is making it clear and truthful, feeling it, being margish it. And I'd like to give you a mashal that may help explain why this is so imperative. Imagine you're walking down the street and you see a man stumble and he's kind of looks a little tipsy and he's, oh, whoo, he's drunk, clearly drunk. Oh, and he's under a car and he reaches down and he's looking and he's looking, he's looking for something. So you stop and you say, sir, what are you looking for? Oh, I'm looking for, I lost the keys to my house. I can't get in. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me help you. So you look under the car with him, and you look over here, and you look over there. He can't find the keys. You can't find the keys. You feel terrible. It's cold. The man's clearly drunk. He needs the keys to his house, but you can't help him. So you say to him, sir, are you certain that you dropped the keys here?
No, I didn't drop the keys here.
Well, if you didn't drop the keys here, why are we looking over here?
I dropped them over there, but there's a street lamp here. It's better lit over here. I figured we should look over here where it's better lit.
Are you drunk? And the answer is yes, he's drunk. You see, when you're drunk, your mind is blurred. Your normal, intelligent, brilliant cognitive thought processes is slurred and blurred. You're hazy. And if you'd like to understand life, that's exactly what life is about. Later on, we'll get involved in the whys Hashem did it. But when Hashem put us into this life, and Hashem put us into this body, and Hashem put us into a state of semi-alertness, semi-drunkenness, we're a little bit like that drunk guy. And you could spend your life thinking about things, wondering about things, pondering about things, and you get it and you don't, you do and you don't, you sort of understand it and you sort of don't. And if you'd like to understand how it could be that I could sit there davening, literally speaking to Hashem, literally having conversation and asking Hashem for very important things, things that matter to me, whether it be health, whether it be livelihood, and I'm begging Hashem, I'm begging, and suddenly a thought comes into my mind and I'm somewhere else. I've disappeared. How could I be? A moment ago I was speaking to Hashem, and I recognize Hashem is all powerful, and I recognize that Hashem is going to be the one to determine whether I get that which I need or not. How could I space out? In front of a human being, I would never do that. If I was standing in front of the chairman of the board of a major corporation and making a presentation, I wouldn't have ADD. Yet how could it be that in front of Hashem I do? The answer is I get it and I don't. I'm speaking to Hashem, I'm speaking to the King, the creator of the heavens and earth, and where am I? I get it and I don't get it. I do and I don't. I'm a little bit like that fellow who's drunk. The cognitive mind works. I can intelligently speak things out, but there's a haze, there's a fuzziness, there's a lack of clarity. And much of the work that we do is to make it clear. Much of the work that we do is to focus, to understand, to bring it home. And if you'd like to understand how fundamental this is, listen to the words that we say regularly in Alinu. It's a pasuk from Devarim. We say it three times a day at least. V'yadata hayom v'shivosa el levavecha. You should know today and you should return it to your heart. Ki Hashem Elokim, that Hashem Elokim is God. V'shamayim mima'al, in the heavens above. V'laretz mitachas ein od, and in the land below there's no one else. You should know and you should feel. You should know it and you should review it in your heart. Well, here's the question. V'yadata means you should know. If you know it, what do you mean v'ashivosa levecha? You should bring it close to your heart. If you know a fact, you know the fact. If you know the fact, you don't have to bring it close to your heart. V'ashivosa levecha means you have to bring it close to your heart because you don't feel it, you don't know it. So if you have to bring it close, then you don't v'yadata, you don't know it. It's a contradiction. But the answer to that contradiction is exactly the purpose of life, to get it clear, to understand, to gain levels and levels of clarity. But it's done incrementally, it's done slowly, slowly, la'at la'at, she'iz bara v'yisametz. If you'd like to know much of the work of all of the shmuzim, much of the work of everything that is done in the shmuz, it's to bring it clear. It's to take point A, we start at point A, and it's to get to point B. But it's a process. Why? Because it's not just facts, it's not just laying out certain understandings, it's a perspective, it's a sensation, it's experiential, it has to be something that's real, something that cuts through the haze, something that I feel, that I'm margish. When you walk out of shul on Yom Kippur, you feel differently. You may not have gained any new knowledge in the sense that you didn't learn a new masechta, you didn't learn a new halacha, but you're a changed man. Speak to a person who lived through a car accident. Speak through a person, Rahman al-Talan, had cancer. A person who lives through a life trial is a different human being. Lance Armstrong writes in his book that he changed radically. Lance Armstrong won
one of the most difficult sports triumphs ever imaginable. For 7 years in a row, he won the Tour de France. He won the most difficult bike challenge, bike race ever imaginable, and he became a sensation, probably, certainly in his generation, maybe in history, there'll never be another man who will do that. And when he was being interviewed, the person interviewing him was asking him how he came to this. Because if you remember the story, Lance Armstrong wasn't always so vibrant and healthy. Lance Armstrong was an average athlete, and he contracted cancer. But he contracted the type of cancer that was considered fatal, and it was in a part of the body that the doctors basically gave up hope, at most 20% chance of survival, but certainly no hope of ever racing again. In any case, he survived, and he went back to racing, and after winning his second Tour de France, he was being interviewed, and the person interviewing him was discussing what it was like to come back from cancer and now win such accolades, to win such world fame. What's it like to be an athlete coming back through this? And Lance Armstrong explained what it was like, and he talked about the cancer, and he described what it was like getting well and being sick, etc. And at a certain point, the person interviewing him said, I don't understand. The way you're talking about cancer is the way I talk about drinking a Diet Coke. You're so cavalier. You're so lighthearted about it. Why is that? And Lance Armstrong said, why is that? Getting cancer was the best thing that ever happened to me. And not only that, he said, if I had a choice to do it again, of course I would choose to have it, because why would I turn down the best thing that ever happened to me in my life? And Lance Armstrong credits the grit, the courage, the guts that it took to train to become a world champion to living through that experience. You see, he became a changed man. He didn't learn a new chapter of physics. He didn't learn muscle physiology with a different understanding, but there was a change in him. His perception, his understanding, but more than anything, his understanding of life, that life is short. There's a beginning, there's an end, and there's a purpose, changed. And that changed everything. What the Mesillas Sharm is teaching us is that the purpose of learning Musar is not just cognitive, not just amassing facts. It has to be something you feel, something you experience, and the only way you can do it is oftentimes by reviewing again and again. In the Shmuzim, I'm very, very careful not to chazer. I'm very careful not to repeat that which I said in another Shmuz, and in a certain sense, I'm guilty of maybe an avla. Maybe it's not proper. Why? Because review is essential. Going over it again and again until I get it, till I feel it, till I experience it, is sine qua non for learning Musar, because it's the basics of how you bring it and how you make it real. And as funny as it sounds, I try not to repeat whenever I say a shmuz, but I myself repeat those shmuz many, many times for me. Why? Because I need to experience it. I need to feel it. And I can't tell you how many times I've done this routine about appreciating food. I go through the whole routine about the orange and the apple, and if you remember the shmuz, you review it. And many a time I wait for another opportunity. Oh, I hope I can speak about that. Why? Because when I'm done, my brachas are different. I pick up an apple and I make a bari per eight, and it's a different bracha. What do you mean? What's different? I didn't learn anything new. I just took out my notes. At this point, I don't even have to look at the notes. But saying it, thinking about it, dwelling on it, changes me, and I'm a different person. How long does it last for? Maybe a day, maybe a week, maybe a month. But that's the point. It requires constantly going back, constantly reviewing, constantly reattacking the issue. And this is a very important point. Oftentimes people have the attitude, well, what's the point? I'll get excited, I'll learn Musar, I'll get really motivated, but it's going to leave me. And it's gone like it wasn't there. So what's the point? I get really into it, I daven differently for one day, my Yom Kippur is different, but after Yom Kippur is gone, I'm back to where I started. So I didn't accomplish anything, I wasted my time. And I'd like to share with you that that's patently false. If you'd like to understand growth on a spiritual level, you have to understand that it's like the waves of an ocean. Imagine what happens like this. Imagine that you're off of on the beach a little bit, and all of a sudden the waves come in and they push you back to shore. But the undertow takes you out. And the wave seems to push you back, but the undertow takes you out further. The wave puts you back, but the undertow takes you out further. You don't realize it, but what's happening is you're going out. The wave takes you back a little bit, but the next undertow takes you further out. The wave takes you back a little bit, but the next undertow takes you out further. And what's happening is you're inching further and further, further and further, and you're heading out towards the deep sea. That's growth in Mussar. It's not straight. It's not linear. It's not like you're going to grow and grow and grow and grow. You're going to take two steps forward and one step back. Then another two steps forward and one step back. Another two forward and one back. But what happens is the growth is incremental. The growth is slow, but as long as you keep growing, you grow and you grow and you change. Your Yiras Shamayim changes. Your appreciation of life changes. Your happiness changes. You don't take a happy pill and suddenly, wow, life is wonderful. But as you learn to appreciate life, as you learn to grow, as you learn why Hashem created me, as you focus on things, you slowly start to grow. And then it leaves you a little bit. It leaves an imprint, but some of it's gone and you come back to the concept. And now you drill it home a little bit further. And then you leave that concept and it kind of fades, but then you come back again and you bring it further. And what you're doing is like the undertow of the ocean, you're going out, you come back a little bit, but you're going out and you head and you head. And after weeks, after months, after years, you grow. But it's a slow, incremental growth process. Oftentimes, you won't find new chidushim, but you go over it, you review it. And what the Mesillas Yesharim is telling us is that this is the avoda, she is bara v'yisametz, that it should become clear and truthful, vivid, right there. I'd like to close this session with a story that I think is very illustrative. The story is told, it's actually in the book, The Vision of Greatness. It's a story is about the chassid of the Tzemach Tzedek. Now, the Tzemach Tzedek lived in the early 1800s. In any case, this chassid of the Tzemach Tzedek fought in the war between Turkey and Russia. And he had been in many, many battles, and it was vicious, bitter fighting. And he survived. And he came back to his town, and he described what the battles were like. He described that they'd be in the bunkers and bombs would fall and destroy every person in the bunker, totally killed. And people would be dying left, right, and center. And he described one battle where the two sides were so close that the captain said to them, draw your swords, we're going to now engage in hand-to-hand combat. And they knew that as soon as the call was made, they'd rush out of the trenches and they'd be engaged in the most horrific fighting. The call came out and they lunged. They were charging, people falling left, people falling right. And this chassid said, do you know what it was like? Do you know the fear that we felt? The fear was so strong, it was like Neela, Yom Kippur Neela. That was the kind of fear we felt. And I said to myself, oh my goodness. I've davened many Yom Kippur. And I've davened many a Neela. But not once would I describe it as literally a battle where people are falling left and right, people are dying in front of me, but that's Yiras Shamayim. Yiras Shamayim is knowing, feeling I'm standing in front of Hashem, understanding that Hashem fills the entire universe, the entire cosmos, but these Dalet Amas as well. But it's not a cognition, it's not reading a Pasuk in Chumash, it's feeling it, experiencing it. What the Mesillas Yesharim is telling us is this is the Yesod HaChassidus, for it to become clear and truthful. What Hashem was saying to Moshe Rabbeinu is, you're going to experience Hashem. Oh, the others knew the name Hashem. Oh, they knew that Hashem pays back, but they didn't have the full experience. You're going to get to experience it, and experiencing it is different. What Noach lived through was a lack of emunah. Noach was a tremendous tzaddik. But you see, emunah is not an on-off switch. It's level after level after level. And as great as Noach was, as much emuni as he had, there was still a certain lack. He didn't 100% see it. And it wasn't until the waters forced him into the teva because he didn't fully believe. And our job in life is to grow level after level. Like that undertow, we have to go out, know that we're going to lose some of the inspiration, but we're going to come back to it. And we're steadily, steadily growing. But it's being inspired, being motivated across the full gamut of everything that we're supposed to work on. When we do that, when we process it, a person grows and it begins reaching his purpose in creation.